Hello, it's Tuesday the 2nd of August and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. Consumer prices rose 6.3% on year last month, growing at the steepest pace in nearly 24 years. We'll have more on the surging inflation in our news briefing shortly. The government's recent proposal to lower the school starting age has been met with fierce public backlash. We take a look at the issue for our in-depth today. And then coming up for Touch Base in Seoul, we meet a musical theatre director and producer who has created a new type of short-form musical for the smartphone era. We'll find out about all that and more for today's Korea 24. The inflation surge has continued. The government has revealed that consumer prices in South Korea rose by 6.3% last month, the largest margin in over two decades. And the central bank has said that inflation will likely stay in the 6% range for some time. For more on these and other headlines of the day, we're joined in the studio by KBS World Radio news editor Eunice Kim now. Eunice Kim, hello.
Hello, Jang-ho.
So Eunice, this is the second straight month that inflation came to the 6% range, and it is the steepest pace since all the way back to the Asian financial crisis.
Yeah, that's right. After the 6% rise we saw in prices for June, July was harder on household budgets. As prices rose by average 6.3% on year, the consumer price index coming in at 108.74, according to Statistics Korea on Tuesday. That is the highest since November of 1998, when prices spiked on the back of the currency crisis, you'll remember, when the Korean won had rapidly plummeted in value. Now, in today's Statistics Korea report, we saw that food prices and utilities were among those that led the gains. The cost of electricity, gas, and water jumped an average 15.7%, the largest increase since January 2010, while prices of agricultural, livestock, and fisheries products rose 7.1% on year. Zoom in on that further, and you'll see why your salad may appear flatter these days, as was the case for me today. The cost of cabbage was up nearly 73%, cucumbers up 73%, lettuce up 63%. The spike in petroleum product prices was slightly blunted at 35% higher on year, compared to 39.6% in June. Service prices also gained 6%, the largest on year increase since April of 1998. Now, taking out volatile food and oil prices, core inflation still came in at 4.5% on year in July.
Yes, both figures are still well above the traditional 2% inflation target. I understand that the Bank of Korea forecasts that the high inflation rate will persist for the time being.
That's right. The Bank of Korea Deputy Governor Lee Hwan-seok, presiding over a meeting on prices, said the 6.3% inflation rate posted in July was in line with the Monetary Policy Committee's expectations and that it will likely remain in that 6% range given persistently high energy costs and demand-side pressure fueled by high inflation expectation. The Deputy Governor attributed the high degree of uncertainty surrounding prices to the protracted war in Ukraine, as well as seasonal factors such as typhoons and heat waves, in addition to rising oil and raw material costs.
Meanwhile, the National Assembly approved a number of economy-related bills during a plenary session on Tuesday to try and help ease the burden for the public.
Yeah, rival parties earlier had launched a special parliamentary committee on livelihoods and economic stability to handle a total of 29 bills. Today, it passed a bill regarding a revision to tax laws that would allow the fuel tax cut to be expanded from 30% to 50%, a measure earmarked to run through the end of 2024. Now, the revision did include language reflecting the government government's concern that the flexible rate could immediately lead to lower fuel taxes, thus stipulating that the rate adjustment will be based on a comprehensive consideration of various factors, such as global oil prices, inflation, and the impact on the state coffers. Parliament also passed a revision to the Income Tax Act, calling for an increased tax deduction limit for office workers' meal expenses from the current 100,000 won to 200,000 won per month. This measure will take effect from January 1st of next year to allow companies to prepare for the adjustment.
Let's turn to some other headlines now. The controversial new police bureau under the Interior Ministry has launched on Tuesday. It is still a widely opposed move by the nation's police, though, right?
Yeah, that's right. The National Police Commission made sure to express its regret over the bureau's launch, promising to seek legal steps to push back. Now, following the cabinet's authorization of revisions to relevant enforcement decrees last week, the police bureau, overseeing key personnel and policy decisions of the National Police Agency, went into operation. It is composed of 16 officials and three divisions supporting general management, personnel affairs, and local police under the Interior Ministry. It is led by Kim Sun-ho, the head of the National Police Agency's National Security Investigation Bureau.
Over to New York next. The Yoon Suk-yeol government has openly criticized North Korea for its nuclear ambitions at the 10th NPT Review Conference. Can you tell us more?
Sure. NPT, of course, stands for Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, taking the stage at the 10th NPT Review Conference at the UN headquarters. Ham Sang-wook, the Deputy Foreign Minister for Multilateral and Global Affairs, said North Korea was the only country in the world that openly develops nuclear weapons by abusing the NPT. He noted that Pyongyang launched an unprecedented 31 ballistic missiles this year alone and is presumed to have concluded all necessary technical preparations to conduct a seventh nuclear test. Addressing the world, Ham stressed that its response to the North Korean nuclear issue will not only serve as a message to Pyongyang, but also as a litmus test on the viability of the NPT system itself. He then urged the North to stop all provocations, observe UN Security Council resolutions, return to full compliance with the NPT, and to realize a complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization. Ham was quick to add that Seoul has repeatedly made clear that its doors are open to dialogue with North Korea.
The United States and other countries also expressed their concerns over North Korea's nuclear weapons during the NPT conference. What else did they say?
Sure. We heard from the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, who said that as the participants gathered for this conference, Pyongyang was preparing to conduct its seventh nuclear test. He stressed the world faced a quote-unquote critical moment and said Washington was willing to cooperate with all nuclear states, including China, to reduce global nuclear threats. Separately, the U.S. was joined by the U.K., France, and Northern Ireland in issuing a joint ministerial statement in which the signatories remain committed to that CVID, complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. They called on Pyongyang to cease all nuclear tests and launches that use ballistic missile technology as required under multiple U.N. Security Council resolutions. The statement also urged Russia to stop nuclear threats and Iran to return to full implementation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Back to domestic politics now. The ruling People Power Party has been embroiled in an internal feud over who will take charge of the party. And today it looks to be a step closer to dissolving the current leadership to appoint interim party runners. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, this of course follows a number of Supreme Council members expressing their dissatisfaction with the current leadership by stepping down from their post. And the interim party leader, Kwon Song-dong, himself posting on social media over the weekend that he would be open to stepping aside as well. The internal feud really came to the public eye when a photo journalist snapped a text message on Kwon Sung-dong's phone showing an exchange with President Yoon dismissive of suspended party leader Lee Jun-suk and Kwon pledging allegiance to Yoon. This has led to questions of who is really in charge of the ruling People Power Party. On Tuesday, four of the PPP Supreme Council's seven sitting members passed that motion to convene the party's Standing National Committee and National Committee to deliberate over whether to transition the party to emergency mode. The two committees could hold their meetings as early as Friday.
And finally, let's get a check on the COVID-19 situation in Korea.
Sure, we're back to the spike. There were more than 110,000 new COVID-19 cases reported by the KDCA on Tuesday, 111,789 to be exact. And among them were 568 cases from overseas. That is a record high. There were 282 critically ill patients after 16 more people had succumbed to COVID. The country's cumulative caseload came very close to 20 million at about 19,932,000, which will likely eclipse with tomorrow's report.
That's all for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
You bet.
The Education Ministry made a surprise announcement last Friday. It proposed lowering the age children start school from 6 to 5 years old. This could be implemented as early as 2025. During a policy briefing with President Yoon Sung-yeol, the ministry said it would begin in-depth discussions on implementing the new school age system. However, the proposal has drawn quick and strong backlash from teachers, parents and civic groups. To learn more about this controversial policy, we're joined on the line now by reporter Lee Hyo-jin from the Korea Times. Ms. Lee, welcome to the show.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for having me.
So this proposed policy has caused quite a stir this week. Can you first go back to the Education Ministry's key policy plans reported to President Yoon Sung-yeol last week and what was included in that briefing?
Yes, sure. During a policy briefing to President Yoon Sung-yeol on July 29th, Education Minister Park Sun-hae delivered her ministry's key policy plans, which will be carried out throughout the next 5 years. And first of all, the ministry seeks to lower the elementary school entry age to 5 from the current 6, and thereby allow children to start receiving public education a year earlier. And secondly, the ministry will push for an integration of kindergartens and care centers, which has actually long been a topic of hot debates in the education sectors. And the third policy plan the ministry has proposed is to abolish foreign language high schools. These private high schools have been set up to provide in-depth education programs on foreign languages, but critics have been pointing out that these so-called elite schools have been deepening educational inequalities between the students. And the ministry also plans to foster 1 million ICT experts by 2027 through establishment of additional vocational high schools. And lastly, the ministry said it will ease regulations on university and higher education institutions so as to better guarantee an environment where they can pursue innovation.
Okay, so our focus today, though, is on the policy to lower the school starting age. Can you walk us through the details of what was actually proposed?
Yes. Currently, children in Korea, they are enrolled in elementary school on March 1st, following the year in which they have turned 6 by the international age system. So the ministry is now planning to lower that age to 5, beginning from as soon as 2025. And if this proposal is implemented, it would be the first reform in elementary school admission age in 76 years since the establishment of the Education Act in 1949.
Okay, and what's the reasoning behind the new school age system? What is the government trying to achieve with this policy?
Well, the Education Ministry believes that lowering the admission age and allowing children to receive public education a year earlier would help address educational inequalities. this actually has been quite a serious issue here, because many people see that the difference in the amount of private education a student gets, it has a significant impact on like his or her academic performance. And this gap continues like throughout their life. So that is why the government is seeking to guarantee children an equal start within the public education system from an earlier age.
Right, so there are parents in Korea who are taking out private education for their children even before they start elementary school to give them a leg up before they start school, and that education gap is being seen throughout the academic careers. I understand the government's proposal also in order to ease the burden on preschool tuition as well. So there is debate on whether lowering the school starting age would address these problems or not, but there is also the practical issue of how they would put the policy into practice. How do they actually propose to lower the school age?
Yeah, well, detailed measures are yet to be announced, but the education minister has said that several options are under discussions. And during an interview with the local radio on Monday, she spoke about gradually implementing the policy from the year 2025 and then throughout the next 12 years. So it goes like this, like in March of 2025, children born between January 2018 to January 2019 will be admitted to school. And the next year, those born between February 2019 and February 2020 will be admitted. And it will go on until 2036, when children born between December 2029 and December 2030 will be sent to school.
Right, so initially the headlines said that the government plans to lower the school age as soon as 2025, but the education minister has said it can be a more gradual process than that, and
exactly,
that is one
yes.
of various proposals, and that other options are also being considered. Now, as we mentioned, this proposal has received a strong backlash from teachers, parents and civic groups. Can you fill us in on why they are opposed to the possible change in the school starting age?
Yes. So actually, on Monday, a large-scale rally was held in front of the presidential office calling for the government to withdraw its plans. And this protest gathered unions of school teachers, preschool teachers, parents groups, as well as members of civic groups. And to begin with, teachers are very concerned that the reform will require a tremendous amount of budget in order to increase the number of teachers and like also to prepare the resources needed for the additional influx of students. And also, a lot of students have raised questions whether these five-year-old children are ready to fit into the current school curriculum, considering the developmental characteristics of the children in early childhood. And parents as well, they're very concerned that their kids may not be ready for school because they're too young. And in school, they would have to face some strict disciplines and competitions. And I've talked to a few parents the other day, and another big concern among them is a lack of after-school daycare programs. Like if their children begin to join school a year earlier, it will really come as a big burden, especially for a household where both parents work.
Right. And initially, there are also concerns about kids who are perhaps who could perhaps go to school with someone who's a year older than them as well. But the government has says, as we said earlier, there could be a gradual progression for that. But concerns are there. What's also interesting that is there has been opposition from both progressive and conservative groups over the last couple of days. We're also seeing response from political parties to the proposed changes. Can you brief us on how the parties have reacted so far as well?
Yes, this policy was actually discussed today during an education committee session at the National Assembly. And members of the main opposition Democratic Party of Korea, they strongly condemned the education authorities for introducing the policy without any discussions with people closely involved in the matter, such as parents, teachers, or education offices. The lawmakers called the ministry to retract its decision, which they viewed is currently only facing backlash from the public. And as for the minor Liberal Justice Party, it was also very critical about the idea. The party spokesperson called the policy a hate hasty and risky idea, and he denounced the authorities for abruptly bringing up the plan, which was not included in President Yoon Suk-yeol's campaign pledges. But on the other hand, the ruling People Power Party seem to be supportive. Lawmaker An Cheol-soo of the party said he has long been thinking that the country should begin discussing about the reform in the school admission age, and that education reform overall is one of the most crucial national tasks of the incumbent administration.
Right. Part of the criticism has been that this proposal essentially seemed to come out of the blue. It was not part of President Yoon's campaign pledge, as you said, and it had seemingly been announced without consultation with related parties, such as teacher groups, parent groups, and so forth. So it is a controversial proposal, but it hasn't actually completely come out of the blue, has it? It was also discussed during previous governments. Can you tell us why it failed to come to fruition in previous administrations?
Yes, you're right. Similar proposals had been made during the previous Roh Moo-hyun, Lee Myung-bak and Park Geun-hye administrations, but all fell through due mainly to the backlash from parents and teachers. And this is why some critics currently they view that this also may be just a repeat of what we have seen during the previous administrations, like conflicts and confusions. So they believe that the current administration should persuade the public as to why this policy is necessary at this point of time.
The Education Ministry has cited the UK as an example where the school age starts from five. But more broadly speaking, what age do kids start in other countries?
Yes, but actually the ideal age to start school varies by country, but it is set at the age six in most OECD countries. If you look at the OECD's Education at a Glance, an annual report on the education system of member states, as of 2019, in 26 countries among the 38 member states, children become eligible to start the first year of compulsory school at the age of six. But in eight countries, including Finland and Estonia, students start school when they are 7 years old. And as you said, in some countries such as the United Kingdom or in Ireland, they enroll four-year-old children in primary school.
Right, so even when compared to the situation in other countries, South Korea would become a minority among OECD countries if the school age was lowered to five. So then this proposal has caused quite a public reaction. What do you think is the likelihood that the Yoon administration will actually be able to carry out this perhaps bold policy? What can we expect?
Well, for now, I think it remains to be seen whether the administration can actually push the policy. Because following public backlash, the education minister told reporters Monday that her ministry will engage in in-depth discussions with school officials, education experts, and parents before finalizing its plan. However, she noted that the ministry plans to come up with a blueprint of the reform plan by the end of the year. However, I would like to add that chances are very slim that related bills would be swiftly passed at the National Assembly, because the reform requires revision to the Act on Elementary and Secondary Education. But as I said, the Democratic Party, which opposes the proposed policy, holds the majority in the Assembly with 172 out of the total 300 seats at the moment.
Yes, so the prospects do not look great at the moment, but the Yoon administration also risks losing face publicly if they do a U-turn and pull this policy. So we will have to watch to see how they continue to move ahead with this policy. We'll wrap it up there. We've been speaking to reporter Lee Hyo-jin from the Korea Times. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update.
The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index fell 12.63 points, or 0.52% on Tuesday, closing the day at 2,439.62. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also fell, losing 3.27 points, or 0.40%, to close at 804.34. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened 0.7 won against the dollar, ending the day at 1,304.71.
You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
We continue on now to Korea Trending, our daily segment looking at some of the other news stories that have been trending online. And for that today, we have joining us in the studio, Jenny Sa. Jenny, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Jenny.
Yes, let's head straight into our stories today and understand we are starting with a damages suit related to a disturbing story from a few years ago.
Yes. A court has made a decision regarding a case involving a 5-year-old boy sexually molesting a female classmate at a daycare center in Seongnam City, Gyeonggi Province, 3 years ago. According to local media, on Tuesday, the court ruled that the boy's parents and the head of the daycare center should together compensate the victim's family 15 million won, which is around $11,000.
Yes, this story made headlines in 2019. Can you remind our listeners of what happened?
Yes, in November 2019, the boy allegedly sexually molested the victim several times in secluded places near her home, as well as at the daycare center. The girl experienced inflammation in parts of her body and suffered from psychological trauma. Since there's no legal basis to punish a 5-year-old, the victim's parents chose to hold the parents accountable and filed a suit for damages. And the parents of the boy also filed a countersuit, claiming that their reputation was defamed by online posts made by the victim's mother.
Yes, and unfortunately at that time, there was also controversy involving the then Minister of Health and Welfare when he fueled the public's anger by calling the boy's actions a natural aspect of the developmental process that was excessively expressed. Meanwhile, can you tell us more about the court's decision?
Yes, the court ruled in favor of the victim's family, citing that the boy's actions, which physically and mentally injured the girl and her parents, were considered a harmful act. It also pointed out that the responsibility rests with the boy's parents, who had the duty to supervise the child as he lacks the ability to discern between right and wrong. And the court highlighted the negligence of the teachers in charge, saying that these incidents were within the scope of the director's protective supervision and foreseeability. The boy's parents' countersuit was rejected, with the court ruling that it is difficult to specify the identity of the boy's parents and the daycare center from the victim's mother's online post. And the legal battle is expected to continue as the daycare center director and the boy's parents have appealed against the decision.
Right, so we will see how the appellate court rules and also see if it goes further up the judicial system as well to the Supreme Court. Let's move on to our next story. Meanwhile, what do you have for us?
A dog that attacked and seriously injured an 8-year-old boy in Ulsan Metropolitan City was handed over to an animal protection group amid calls to have the dog put down. The Ulsan Ulju Police Station announced on Monday that the Jindo Mix has been sent to an animal protection organization at the end of last month, as there was no veterinarian who was willing to carry out the euthanasia procedure.
Yes, this story has been in the news for a while now. Can you give us a brief background on this incident?
The 13-kilogram dog attacked a boy on July 11th in an apartment complex in Ulju-gun, Ulsan, biting him repeatedly on his neck. The boy was hospitalized for the injuries. And the dog is said to have gotten free of the leash on the day of the attack and ran from home, which is located near where the incident took place. The owner of the canine, who is a man in his 70s, is currently under investigation on charges of negligence.
Okay, so then what happened to the dog after the incident?
Well, the dog is considered a confiscated item from his owner, and three options exist for handling confiscated items. They can be disposed of, returned to the owner, or consigned. And the police initially asked the prosecution to approve the disposal or euthanasia of the dog, but the prosecution judged that there was insufficient data to acknowledge that there is danger in storing the said item. Then euthanasia was considered under the Animal Protection Act, but as no vet was willing to do the procedure, the only realistic option was to transfer custody of the dog, according to Ulju Police. The protection group has stated that the dog is gentle and has shown no signs of aggression, but the debate continues over the fate of the animal.
Right, this incident has also highlighted the lack of specific laws regarding dogs that are dangerous and what to do with them. And there are increasingly calls for more clarity in situations like this before another incident like this happens again. Mm-hmm. OK, let's move on to our final story. What else do you have for us today?
Students from a South Korean high school have taken the top prize at Japan's largest high school manga contest on Sunday. According to local media, the team from Jeonnam Girls High School placed first out of 179 schools at the National High School Manga Championships held in Kochi Prefecture, Japan.
Okay, so students from a Korean high school won this Japanese manga competition. Interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about this competition?
Yes, it's also known as Manga Koshien, and this year's competition saw 20 schools competing in the final round. Three foreign high schools, one each from South Korea, Singapore, and Taiwan, were among the finalists, with 17 Japanese high school teams. The final round required students to create a one-page manga in 5 hours and 30 minutes based on an assigned theme, according to the competition's website.
Okay, so what was the winning artwork about?
Well, in this year's finals, the participating teams were given the theme A Gentle or Kind World. And the winning submission starts with a man covered in tattoos approaching a group of high school girls who are lost. And the girls look scared of the man initially, believing him to be part of the Yakuza. But the tattoos turn out to be a map of the area, which the man uses to guide the girls on their way. And this is only the second time that a Korean school has won the competition following Jeonnam Arts High School in 2017. And teams that stand out in the finals can be scouted by major publishers or given a chance to debut as professional manga artists.
Indeed. So congratulations to the girls. That's where we'll wrap it up for today's Career Trending. Thank you for those stories, Jenny, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
A few years ago, our guest today for Touch Base in Seoul came under the spotlight for a musical he wrote, directed and produced titled Comfort Women, a new musical, which was also the first off-Broadway musical by a Korean director. Now he's again charting new territory, making short-form musical videos that last less than a minute to reach a new generation of musical fans. To tell us more about himself and this latest project, I'm delighted to say that musical director Demo Kim has joined us in the studio today. Mr. Kim, hello and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hello.
Thanks for coming today. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Can you first tell our listeners and viewers a little bit more about yourself? I understand that you grew up in South Korea. Mm-hmm. What first led you to the musical scene?
So when I was 4, I saw the musical Cats in Korea, and usually 4 to 5 years old kiddo dream about dinosaurs, and after I saw the Cats, I dreaming about all the 28 characters from the musical.
Wow.
So I was like fascinated in the musicals, and luckily
4 years old, yeah, as well.
Yeah, my mom was like musical fan.
Right.
And then luckily Cats DVD was on, and I was fortunate to see Cats more than many times. And then producer Seol Do-yoon, who's like godfather of the musical theater, was simultaneously in the lobby for the opening nights of the Cats in 2001. And he was like, oh, like, you're a young kiddo, like, how'd you come by yourself? And I was like, I saw Cats like more than like 100 times. And he was like, oh.
So this was a bit later on, a few years later, when you're,
yes,
2001, when you're about 10
when
years
I was
old.
Like 11.
Right.
And then he was like, oh, like, you know musical Cats? And, oh, I know this and that. And he was like, oh, just come to see the show anytime you can. And he introduced the house manager that if you see this kiddo, just give him an NP sit. And after that, that relationship getting bigger and bigger, and somehow in the musical scene.
That's amazing. Yeah. Starting from 4 years old as well. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. It seems you pursued it all the way to New York as well, where you continued to study theater and performing arts. Mm-hmm. How was it moving to New York and studying there after having that dream from such a young age?
Yeah, like, so all my dream was just making a new musical. And in my dream, I was questioning myself, like, why in Korea we have to make, like, licensed musical or, like, musical that contain the Western stories in it. And but in the industry and the all this education stuff was focused in the licensed musical at the time. Mm. So I was like, what if I go to New York and make a new musical over there, and but musical about like Korean stuff or Asian stuff in there. And what if I bring him back to Korea, and what are they going to call it? They're going to call licensed musical or new musical? And I was trying to challenge that. So that was when I was like 19, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to New York.
So even at that age, you wanted to make your own musical, not just perform, but you wanted to direct and write and produce an original musical.
Right.
That's incredible as well. So that was always your dream, to direct and produce musicals then?
So at the time, and still now, I don't know what directing and producing in particular to distinguish the term of the musical theater, because I want to be a creator like, or a torchbearer for the musical theater. And still I'm learning, because directors sometimes have to write something and writer have to produce something. So nowadays, I believe more the job title doesn't contain the actual role for the industry. So,
right.
Yeah, I want to be a creator.
So you pursued that dream.
Yes.
And you are perhaps best known for the musical we talked about earlier. The 2015 work, it was called Comfort Women, a new musical, a musical about a very difficult topic, victims of Japanese wartime sex slavery.
Right.
There was another production in 2018, gaining much attention both in New York and in Korea. So what was that experience like, putting on this musical that you had created? And also in a previous interview, you also talked about how you wanted to bring this musical in particular back to Korea. Have you made any headway on that?
So 2015, I didn't expect the reaction in New York City like that, because mostly theater goers in New York City are major audience are Jewish, and somehow the story and the theme of the musical clicked their interest.
Sure.
And then on the website, on the ticket link, it was empty seat. But in the theater, there's a huge line of baby boomer Jewish lining up down to the the whole theater district, and it was sold out every day. And I was like, still, I don't know how to describe that kind of marketing. It was not even the marketing. It was just like mouth-to-mouth marketing.
Mouth,
yeah, word of mouth. And so I thought, it would be easy to bring the show back to Korea. And I was like, oh, my dream going to get true, because I'm making a new musical in New York City and bringing it back to Korea.
Sure,
and,
I said earlier,
my theory about, oh, what are you going to call licensed musical, new musical going to happen? But in end of 2015, the agreement between Korea and Japan of Foreign Affairs happened about the deal.
Okay, yeah.
And then somehow the issue of sexual slavery become right and left issue in Korea. And it become another propaganda. And I got many offers from some producers, but still every time I look at behind the funding, there's some political movement in there. And I really hope this show getting not used to be as a propaganda, because this is show story about the girls who lost their dream, not about the comfort room and about the political issues. And I'm highly trying to refrain to use this musical being some political propaganda. So I was like, maybe not this time.
Okay.
So still postponing.
So it's still postponing, but it is ultimately a dream for you to have this production in Korea someday.
Yes.
Hopefully when it is perhaps less political, the scene, but we will see then. So you've been busy in the musical scene, both in the US and Korea over the last few years. But of course, it's been a difficult time for the industry with the COVID-19 pandemic, shutting down productions around the world for most of the part of 2020 and 2021. Did it affect you as well? How difficult was it for you during this period?
The big engine, which is Broadway, stopped during COVID. And once the big engine stopped, the whole industry is going to stop. There's no new musicals, no workshops. And especially I'm portraying Asian American theaters. And it's always a new work, because there's no infrastructure on Broadway. So major of my work in New York City was stopped. And there's no guarantee to putting it back. And still, like, still Broadway's on, and we are gaining a lot of audiences, and interest going well. But still, about the new work stuff is very hard season right now, because right now we are trying to focusing on the rebuilding, and but there is no recreation yet. So it was hard.
So is that why we find you in Korea now as well? Perhaps because there's more opportunities here in Korea at the moment.
Because Korea, the theater was never closed. The only city, the theater was never closed. And, and the love for the musical theater, and then especially the online or the new way of like short form, YouTube, Instagram, those kind of mobile platform is way active in any other word. So yeah, like so was the opportunity.
Sure, that's where we go into this new series of short form musicals for the smartphone era, should we say, called Mosaical. This is a portmanteau of the words mobile and musical, and it was created in collaboration with Kiwi Lab, a company specializing in short form content. Can you tell us more about this series then?
So I was always dreaming about like how I'm gonna shorten this process of making musical theater, because we put like 3 to 6 years of process of making it, and somehow the show may not go on, or somehow show is getting flop, and then like the process is way too long, and then the tempo of the show is 2 hours or 90 minutes, so it's very hard process to making whole show. And I was thinking about, but even the whole 2 hour show, there's a lot of bits in there. And what if I make molecules about the bit about even one song or one sequence? And then what if we communicate with the audience as the molecules? And then I was trying to make it short, like 30 minutes and 1 minute and 30 seconds. And I was trying to how to bring new audiences for the theater.
Sure.
And especially MJET audiences, they cannot bear more than 1 minute. And I say, how am I going to bring this audience to even the theater? And and also in Korea, I was trying to introduce, because in America, audience follow the stories. Hear more about these musical skills and the actors. Or it's like star powers. And I was like, there's a joy of following the story or theme in musical theater. And but I had to try to prove that even though at daily basis events can be a musical, only like 14th century or any history events, that's not the only option for the musical theater. Like anything can happen from the musicals. And also the genre of the music, I was trying to prove musical, there's no genre for musical.
Right.
It was pop song on Billboard, like 1920s. So there's no pop song, there's no musical songs. Like any song can be musical numbers. There's no certain genre for musical. So I was trying to merge the genre for that. And while I'm having that questioning and agony, I met Ki-young Kim, the president of the Kiwi Lab, and they were also looking for to making a, because they're widely well known for MCN company. And all the short form, they're like leading company in the, probably not just in Korea, like over the world. They were trying to make a new contents, like original stuff. And we have a common goals together, and it's like, oh, why don't we combine this short-form musical and also short-form originals, you know, musical, and it's getting good reactions from the
audience. Great. I mean, it's really interesting. So on one hand, it's about making musicals more accessible for a new audience, a new generation of people, MZ generation, as they say. But also, at the same time, it's also trying to make musicals more accessible for those who are making musicals as well, because musicals can be so difficult to put on, but through these short form 30-second, 1 minute musicals, you get to explore different ideas and also teach people about these different sorts of musical genres. So just to explain a bit more, the videos are almost like short skits. They're less than a minute long. They play out a scenario, such as an office worker who's found out that his crypto savings have crashed, or a women falling in love with a colleague after a small act of kindness at the lunch table. Yeah. Each week it's a different story and they all feature original music. Mm-hmm. And the videos, they're very highly produced as well. It seems like a lot of work goes into each video.
It's a hell of work right now because I'm calling the composers in Broadway like saying, oh, like we need this. So we get the demo tape that's on Monday and Tuesday. We put the lyrics on it. And it's Wednesday, orchestration. And Thursday, they make storyboards. And Kiwi Lab make a video team. And then camera on Saturday, recording. Sunday, editing. And Monday, it's on. So it's a lot of work.
Even though it's only 30 seconds to a minute, it seems like a lot of work. Yeah. But you said the response has been great so far.
Yes. it's better than I thought.
Really? Yeah. Like, what kind of responses have you been getting?
Because I thought only the musical theater fans going to react, but actually, whole my dream about building infrastructure, bringing a new audience for the musical theater happened because all the comments and all the view data is not just a musical theater fans. It's just pop fans. It's just natural fans out there. So and I was like, oh, it's getting there.
And international, it seems, as well. I saw the comments. It's not just Koreans commenting. It's from all over the world as well.
All over the world, yeah.
Interesting. I understand that musical stars like Michael K. Lee, Brad Little, Chun Na-young, they'll be involved in the project as well. Mm-hmm. You're also working with composer Andy Rondinson, who is active in Broadway. What was it like to work with them on this project? Did they get what you were trying to do? Did they understand?
Michael and Brad, they got it quite instantly.
Right.
Because we know, as a theater people, we know we are living in a doom. Like musical theater world.
Right, and in a dome, yes.
Yeah, dome. Yeah, and we're trying to knock to the outside. And we're like, probably this is the only way to communicate the outside. And they're like, oh, I got it. And they understand very easily. Yeah.
It sounds exciting. If for our listeners who want to check it out, the primary platform is on TikTok, I believe. Is that right?
TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, yes.
Yes, and just search for Mosaical. That's MOSAICAL, or search for Mojikal in Korean as well. Finally, what's next for you? Will this project be taking up most of your time, or are there other irons in the fire?
Still waiting to be Broadway, to be back, and trying to relaunch the projects I was working for. But still, I'm looking highly... I have a really big expectation on this one because probably I'm going to extract, and with Kiwi Lab, we're going to extract few great reaction numbers as a concert and as a live shows. And even with the TikTok, we're looking for a live token show as NFT-wise. And probably that's maybe the new way to communicate with the global audiences. So, yeah, I have a high expectation about this project right now.
Wow, that sounds exciting. We wish you luck with the Mosaical project. We also look forward to your future projects as well. We've been speaking to musical director Demo Kim. Thank you once again for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I am pianist William Yoon. You're now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
We finish up the show as usual with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers, namely the Korea Times and the Korea Herald, who we thank for providing us with their early editions to make this segment possible. And joining us in the studio now is our staff editor, Richard Larkin. Richard, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello. Good to see you, too.
Okay, so where are we headed to first?
First, we have information about the Korea Foundation World Cinema Week that starts in Seoul this Friday. Hwan Dong-hee's article in the culture section of the Korea Herald tells us everything we need to know about this year's event that will focus on films from Latin America.
Okay, interesting. So tell us more about who's behind the Korea Foundation World Cinema Week.
Well, 12 Latin American countries' embassies are co-hosting the event. These include countries like Argentina, Chile, Mexico, and Paraguay. The aim is for people to explore cultural and historical diversity through 12 films that were selected by each embassy. The article also says that as well as the film screenings, there will be talk programs. These will be hosted by writer Kim Yong-ha, book YouTuber Kim Gyo-ul, and film critic Jung Sung-il. They will introduce four of the movies that will feature at the KF World Cinema Week and provide an on-site forum for discussions.
Okay, and what movies will be screened at the event?
One standout movie is called Days of Light, which is co-directed by six young directors, each from different Latin American countries. There are six stories that are combined to make one film. Each story has a different theme. For example, a pilot who gets injured from an accidental landing, a teenage girl's 15th birthday party that goes bad, and a detached couple who find each other during the solar storm. There will be offline screenings at CGV Cheongdam CineCity this Saturday and Sunday, and online screenings will take place on Naver TV until August 18th. 70% of the tickets are available on the KF World Cinema Week's website, and apparently on-site ticket sales will be sold on a first-come, first-served basis. All tickets are free of charge.
Wow, free of charge as well. So it's a wonderful opportunity to discover more about Latin American cinema. Okay, moving on. What's next?
Next, we have some news about writer Kim Hoon-hee, who is behind Netflix's hugely popular zombie horror series, Kingdom, and the crime drama Signal. Kwak Yeon-soo's article in the entertainment and arts section of the Korea Times talks about the star writer's upcoming project.
Okay, interesting. So what is the project about then?
Well, Kim's next project is something very different to her previous works. She has written a script for an inspiring basketball movie called Rebound. According to the article, the film is loosely based on the true story of the Joongang High School basketball team in Busan. The story follows enthusiastic basketball coach Kang Yang-hyun as he tries to rally the struggling team. In 2012, the team looked to defy the odds and reach the finals of the National High School Basketball League.
Well, Koreans love a good basketball story, especially after there was a hit K-drama in the 90s called Majimak Seungbu. The English title, I think, is called The Last Match. That was a huge hit, something that people still talk about nowadays. So why did the writer decide to take on this project then?
Well, that is because of her husband, director Jang Han-jun. Jang said he wanted to direct a basketball movie because people love underdog stories and there hasn't been a movie about basketball players in Korea. When he told his wife about his plans for the project, Kim was interested and decided to also play a part in making the movie. This is Kim's second time working on a script for a film following the 2006 romance Once in the Summer. So, if you liked Kim's previous works, it might be worth checking out Rebound when it's released. Right now the movie is in post-production, but its release date will be announced in the near future.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there for a Morning Edition preview. Thank you for those stories, Richard, and we'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of another edition of Korea 24. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. So we hope you can join us again then to continue to get your daily dose of Korean news analysis. Till then, we hope you have a great day. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.